And it's not written in stone, it's a map. And for me, it's a roadmap. And I have a friend who's a neuropsychologist. And one of the things that Charlotte says is a book that she wrote is called Awakening the Brain, The Neuropsychology of Grace. And Charlotte was a very old nun before she got her doctorate in neuropsychology. And one of the things that we've had conversations about awareness, about evolution, and we really have to be aware that we can grow to be more than we are, to move into that. And she says, as far as that, she's a fan of Teilhard de Chardin, who of course spoke about evolution from a theological perspective. And I won't talk too much longer because I think the concept is so fascinating, because we talked about the expanding universe. So I said to him, well, what is behind the expansion? And she looked at me as if I was a six-year-old and said, love, God, that's the principle that's behind everything, And she says, we're just at the beginning stages of our evolution. And I think in our society, there are some of the people who've backtrack. Well, anyway, we all live in this culture, which is where we are, where God's planted us, and where God wants to use us as channels of grace. I truly believe that. So, and it's interesting, Power versus Force was, I think, one of David Hawkins' original books. The one I'm really fascinated with right now is his last book. He's died, and it's called Letting Go. And I'm interested in that because I really do believe the second part of life, or last third, is about letting go, isn't it? You know, it's about letting go. We know it's about letting go. And one of the things he does a great job in Letting Go is he talks about the different emotions we have. And I just found it so powerful because all I know is my experience, which is my stomach churns, you know, I get hot, I get irritable, I do things that I don't want to do. And that's why these attitudes and knowing what happens with this map of consciousness, knowing what I am called to be. You know, as Basil Menken said, we're called to be happy with God in this life, in these containers. And I truly believe that. But it's interesting, too, that the title of this book, Power versus Force. And I think it's an interesting distinction because we live in a culture that's imbued in power and conflict between force. It's really force and not power. Opposing forces. And I think we're called to live powerful lives. By virtue of the Spirit who lives within us. One of my favorite gospel scenes is Jesus is moving through this crowd, a large crowd. Someone touches his cloak, not even him. And he says to his disciples, who are like I am so much of the time, clueless, right? They're pretty clueless, bunch. He says, who touched me? And they say, well, what are you talking about? There's a whole crowd here. And Jesus says, I felt my power go out of me. And so I think we all have that internal power by virtue of the fact that God lives within us. And it's using that power and not force in our current culture, but opening to that power. And I think that's why I think some Christians, some Catholics are clueless because they are unaware of that power within them. So the map of consciousness is no test. No memory, I just want to bring it to our awareness. As our awareness changes, we are open to growth. Another thing I learned from my neuropsychologist friends. I mean, we can be open to it without that, but we're more open. We're more open. And so this map empowers us to know where we stand in the current state of growth. And all the different levels of consciousness are attainable, providing a critical framework for conscious living. And I'm looking for my watch. I don't know what I do. You let me know when I have 5 minutes left.
Sure.
Thank you. And if we know the other levels that are ahead, we can see the limitations of our conscious current level of consciousness. So what is consciousness? It's more than being physically awake. It's more than just being aware. Consciousness is a state of knowingness that encompasses all the mental, emotional, and spiritual aspects of ourselves. The consciousness from which we operate is the lens we use to see reality. Going back again to my neuropsychologist friend. In her book, she says, our beliefs create our reality. Our beliefs create our reality. Big. So I questioned her on that twice. I won't do it again. I think I strike out if I do the third. But she means that our beliefs create our reality. You know, it makes sense to me. It makes sense to me when we look at our scriptures. Paul says we must put on the mind of Christ. And in doing that, when we do that through prayer, through scripture study, many ways, we begin to see things differently, don't we? I think we do. That there's a difference in perspective. Our beliefs make us see, you know, the marginalized in our society, and to see their value, because Jesus was always with the marginalized, wasn't he? Jesus were alive today, he might not be in this chapel. He might be in the soup kitchens. He might be talking to the homeless on the street. And so, if we move to a different level of consciousness, we receive a different lens to view the world. Our thoughts, feelings, beliefs, values, and actions are outputs of the level of consciousness we vibrate at. And our awareness changes, and actually, it works on a vibrational level, transformation. We're all called to be transformed. I like to think into the best version of Teresa that can be. And God's doing a good job for me. Really. God's plan for Teresa is better than anything I can come up with. And if you reflect, I think that's going to be your experience also. So there are two pivotal points in this particular chart. One is the level of 200. And 200 is the level of courage, where affirmation is the key emotion. And this is the separation between power and force. You know? Once again, that force, you know, I'm going to make you do things, or the power I'm going to, and literally, many of the changes I've seen in people are because they have been empowered. People have told them they can do things that they never thought they could. And at 200, we're more concerned, not with competing, but enabling. Helping people to be who they can be. And this is where we start creating change through the use of constructive states of power rather than destructive forces. It's a waking up point. And I would say that predominantly all those seven deadly attitudes are below, primarily level 200. We keep vestiges of them, though, as we move up into levels of consciousness. And the sad part about living below the level of 200 is that the world is seen as hopeless, tragic, frightening, and demanding. We are not free. And I'm sure we all met people like that. They feel that they're in prison, in tune. When I went to the Mass of Easter morning, I was so struck by what Father Joe had to say. You know, we all have our own tombs, and some of them we've made for ourselves. And I want to bust out of those tombs, because there's no life in a tomb, is there? Very little life. But that's so the invitation to live a life of courage, to live a life of power, is to move beyond that frightening little world. Because the people below the 200 see themselves as victims at the mercy of life and subject to the forces of external world. It's not a spiritual life that they would lead. But beginning at the level of 200, we see the world as exciting and filled with possibilities. The empowerment. It's the start of the active pursuit of growth. Where there exists a gap, a person will act to fill it. And as the chart says, life is viewed as being feasible. At the level of 350, there is a level of acceptance. God is the creator and the source of my life. Turning to God as central and not as the guy I visit on Sunday. And at the level of acceptance, we begin to become aware of social constructs in our life, our family, our society, our nation, our religion, our work. In the level of acceptance, it's interesting, and if you say it there, the emotion is forgiveness. And I do some teaching about forgiveness. I hope to become a forgiving person. I am a work in progress, because forgiveness is a work in progress as far as I'm concerned. But the powerful part of forgiveness for me, and the act of forgiving, is I participate in God's life. Because that energy, that willingness to forgive comes from God. I'm absolutely certain about that. And we begin to see life as harmonious at the level of acceptance, not as threatening. Life is good. That's what the t-shirt says, right? Life is good. And remember, go back to what Charlotte said about your beliefs. Your beliefs create your reality. I truly believe that. If life is good, what you experience about life is different. If life is threatening, what you experience is different than if you believe it is good. The level of 500, which is the level of love. Unconditional love, love that is pure, unfaltering, unwavering, not subject to any external conditions. And reverence is the main emotion. Aren't there moments in your life when you just struck the ball? You know, I can't tell you how many times, and I can't tell you how it happens. Because it's a mystery. Let's say sometimes, you know, sometimes I'm going through my day and I'm dragging, you know. It laid me off 3 years ago and I decided I was going to find another job, and I did. But maybe some days when I'm tired, did you make the right decision, Teresa? What kind of fool are you? And then, out of nowhere, I'll be driving. There will be a rainbow. Where do these things come from? I love rainbows as a sign that God's covenant, God's people. But, you know, life, as we open to life, we see things that other people cannot see. I truly believe that. And it is love. And love is the transforming power of the universe. So I asked Charlotte, I said, well, you know, Harold May says that grace is the most powerful force in the universe. I said, well, what do you think about that? She said, I think he's right. I said, well, what do you think about love? She said, it's the same thing. Love and grace are the same thing. Mm-hmm. Things, and that's what God's being, God's love, God's grace down into us. And our job is to open, to be open, to receive. And at the level of 550, 540, there is joy. And the emotion is serenity and compassion. And I think that one of the great gifts for me, as a Catholic, of Pope Francis, is the joy. The joy he's telling us we should experience as followers of Jesus Christ. Powerful. Powerful. And you know, there is that inner joy that arises from every moment of existence, rather than from an external source. There's joy, you know? And I can tell you now, it's not every day, but there are quite a few days in the morning when I get up out of bed, I'll say, another day to love and serve the Lord. What a wonderful opportunity to have. And joy is the level, I'm not saying I have joy. I experience joy at times, and I'll get to that. And level joy is the level of saints, advanced spiritual students and healers that you dwell on. And the world, with joy, the world is seen as one of perfection and beauty. Perfection and beauty. I'm sure we may have some parents and some grandparents in this room. How about newborn babies? One of my sisters is always fascinated with a newborn. The fingernails are perfect on that little hand and the toenails, but just the perfection that we see in the world, the wonderful cherry trees and garden out there, to open to those things, the beauty in life. On the level of P600, the emotion is bliss. We're no longer a distinction between subject and observer. And the level of 700 to 1,000 is in emotion is ineffable. One cannot speak. So like Moses before the burning bush, I have no words. But I can God judge you without words. That experience, that awe. Now, there are distinctions between stages and states of consciousness. And one can temporarily experience a state of consciousness higher than one's present stage. So I can experience joy. I don't get on there. But I can experience joy. Evolving to a higher stage where one lives. You know, say maybe Pope Francis is at that level of joy. Is when there is a predominance of the attributes of the level, certain level of consciousness. And so it's evolving to those higher states of consciousness. And what David Walton says is that there are two major shifts, 200, I sort of spoke about that, the level of courage, profound shift from destructive and harmful behavior to life-promoting and integrist lifestyle. You know, we're moving, and I would say that the shift is from being, you know, into a spiritual person. And we all have our conversion stories. For some of us, there may be more than one conversion. You know, but we all know when God became really, really important in our lives. And I think that that's one of those paradigm shifts. And then at 500, the level of love. And this is where, and I love psychology because I think psychology can help us understand theology. Because it can be more practical. Our theology is wonderful. But how do I live a Christian life? You know, 24/7. it's interesting, 24/7, I'm not necessarily a big proponent of that. But I did wake up this morning thinking about this talk. So I guess there was something going on in my sleep, which is fine. And the reason why the level of 500 is so important is our ego is rooted in the physical domain, not the spiritual domain. And we're letting go of our ego. And God's healing, all that stuff in the unconscious, you know, the stuff, whatever your stuff. And so looking at the map of consciousness, one of the things that we can see is we can see that invitation to grow. So maybe someday I will become pure consciousness. And when we speak about it in our spirit, we've spoken about it theologically, we've spoken about it on a psychological level, that unity consciousness, I don't know if anyone's ever heard of unity consciousness, and going back to one of my teachers, Father Thomas, he said you can come there, but you can't do everyday things in unity consciousness. You can't go grocery shopping, you know? You can't do the wash. You can definitely pray. But we're called to, I truly believe we are called to that. And we, in the 21st century, have so many more resources to evolve to that. And so this map gives us a better understanding of what spiritual growth and the deepening of our relationship with God looks like. I become more loving as my relationship with God deepens. That is my experience. Now, I've been doing this every year for 29 years. I still consider myself a beginner, so I have a long way to go. But this map shows me, this is where I'm going. I find it exciting that I can evolve to that while I'm still in this body. You know, and so I'm stuck at times at a particular level, particular state of consciousness in a particular state. And why? I am not open. It's almost as simple as that. I have a lack of awareness. In being stuck, I have a lack of awareness of the bigger picture. And how do you value your life? What is the value of your life? And I get stuck that I'm not living in alignment with my real purpose. William Blake, the poet, said, "We're put on earth for a little space to bear love's beams." Isn't that the word about? And that's another one of the things I love about aging. I'm really beginning to get that. It's all about love. And Hawkins, and I'm going to share with you, talks about that love. I think it's so powerful, so transforming. But what I have to do is I have to live in alignment with my real purpose, that God calls me to love, that God calls me to be a person of transformation, a channel of grace. And I believe all of us here would feel that we have a place, which is powerful, to be called by name. And I get stuck when my life runs out of autopilot. I get stuck if I don't make time to pray, which is always bad for me. I think bad for all of us. We need that time. And I get stuck when I engage in non-value-added activities. Random activities. Playing games on the computer. You know why they have those? Why they started with Microsoft with games on the computer. They did that because Microsoft came out with, Apple came out with the first computer with a mouse.
Yep.
And the beginning of it. And they wanted to teach people how to use the
dexterity.
And so they gave them games, so they learned that. And that way, I mean, it's not bad. But, you know, at times, you know, I can fall into doing things like that, which are mindless, not value-added things. And maybe one of you knew, like, Paul, a friend of doing that, Paul, a friend who said, you know, or whatever, do something that has value in it. Eating, mindless eating, watching TV, although it's not all bad, but I would advise us to think about what some of our TV watching habits is. Is it really adding anything to us as people? Surfing the internet once again. I get stuck when I have a passive or I have an avoidance approach to life. And there, in that case, control is something relinquished to people around me. And you know, I think that what we get stuck, I get stuck, when I don't find time to do the things that are important to me, that I need.
Tell me.
I love to walk, I love to exercise. You don't want to be around me if I haven't done that in a couple of days. I think I get on an endorphin love, and I get cranky. But, and I suggest this because my perspective is that good people don't get in trouble by doing bad things. Good people get in trouble by trying to do too much.
That's true.
Anyone here like that? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You know, not able to say no?
Right.
So I was on a conference call with a team I work with on contemplative outreach. Another benefit of technology, you know, if we use it, you know, I talk to people all over the country. And I knew my plate was just about to overflow. and I like to pitch before it overflows, because when it overflows, I'm usually in a mess, commitment-wise, energy-wise, too. That's how Teresa gets herself, you know, in trouble. I make too many commitments. And so somebody said, well, I would like to have someone mentor me to do something. I said, I have no time. You would have said, you would have thought I said that, you know, God was dead. She was not happy. And I said, well, I'll try and find somebody. So, you know, we need to have our boundaries, don't we? Mm-hmm. We need to. We need to do the things that we need. And sometimes I find no time to do the things I want to do because I'm lazy. I'm waiting for the optimal time, you know. And I think, and I'm happy to be speaking to Benedictines, and I've learned, I guess, what I've been coming to things, hosting activities at St. Paul Burger, it's been over 20 years. And that's been a grace and a privilege to me, because I have learned so much about the rule of Benedict from the women who live at St. Paul Burger, how they live the rule. And I'm sure that you, all the oblates too, are also examples to the people in your life. Because there's only so many hours in each day. When I was young in college, I thought I could cheat time. All I did was cheat myself. That if I stayed up late, I could wake up early. Yeah. You know, my mother had it right. She used to say about me, she once was a girl with a curl. When she was good, she was very good. And when she was bad, she was hard. And I trust I can tell you, if I was being bad and if I was hard, I was probably tired and I was cranky. So the thing I love about the balance of the rule, there's only so much time in the day. There's time for work, there's time for prayer, there's time for play. Correct? And to carve out those areas. I get stuck too, you might, deepening my relationship with God, because that's what this map is about. It's just putting it out in different terms. It is about deepening our relationship with God. I get stuck when I get satisfied with myself. I'm doing pretty good. No, I could be doing much better. And so I was reading that Let It Go book the other day. I was waiting for my hairdresser to be free to cut my hair. And I had a very similar reaction I had to when I first read it. I could almost start to weep when he talks about love. Because, you know, on a certain level, I have this little view of love. In our culture, we have this romantic view of love. We think that love is all, it is, but it's so much bigger than romance. And those of you who are married and have been married for many years, you can reflect on how many wonderful things have happened that you never expected to happen when you said I do. And then there are the other things too. But this love is as I would say, it's boundless. So when Hawkins talks about love, he says it is heartfelt, generous, nurturing, affectionate, steadfast, and forgiving. Wow. And yet, that's who John tells us that God is love. And isn't that what we are called to be? Heartfelt, generous, nurturing, affectionate, steadfast, and forgiving. Now, the good news is we don't have to become all those things all at once. It is a process. And it is that deepening of relationship with God that moves us along in the process. I like to say we become like the people we hang out with. So if we spend more time praying, we're more like our God. That make sense? Love is protective, collaborative, uplifting, holistic, and gracious. Protective, collaborative, uplifting, holistic, and gracious. Powerful, powerful words. Uplifting. We meet, Contemplative Outreach in New Jersey meets once a month from October to April at Benedictine Center. And this one man travels from Princeton area most times, and he says, I need to come and pray with everybody because I need my spiritual B12 shot. You know those things that lift us up, like coming to an obligation. You know, I may be dragging when I come in, but afterwards there is all this love in this room. And it's not, and the thing is, go back to Jesus with the person who touched his cloak, and he felt his power go out. Love is not necessarily words. It can be, and it can be deeds. But isn't it at times just an energy? Because we are energetic beings. It is that energy that when we come together and we pray, we take time apart, carve out the time, we are changed. And gracious. Wow. Another countercultural concept, isn't it? Gracious. Over the past 2 years, we've had two speakers come to speak with us at Contemplative Outreach in New Jersey, and they were gracious women. And I guess God works in God's ways. And what I realized is that at times, how ungracious are we? And if you think about it, well, maybe it's because I bang elbows with people in the corporate world, maybe that's why. Because graciousness is not necessarily efficiency, is it? Mm-mm. Graciousness, and these two women, I take all the time you need with me. That type of thing. And I am with you 100%. And my last encounter, I realized that's who I am called to be. You can judge if you're called to be that. Are you called to be gracious? And so I would say that in all of us here, all of you here, having embraced the Benedictine charism of hospitality, have that. But how far along are you in that journey of graciousness? Love is characterized by warmth, gratitude, appreciation, humility, completeness, vision, purity of motive, and sweetness. Warmth, gratitude, appreciation, humility, completion, vision, purity, motive, and sweetness. And theologically, we talk about purity of heart, don't we? And purity of love. Purity of heart is very important. Both of those are high goals for me. Purity of heart is I do things for the right motive all the time, not necessarily for my selfish motive. I sometimes, maybe even astounding, but I sometimes do good so I will look good, and people will tell me I'm good. Well, how about if we just do good for the sake of doing good, without anybody knowing what we've done? That's purity of heart. And then purity of love is to love the other for themselves and not for what they can do for me. And a wonderful thing happened. I was trying to figure out what happened. It was 2 years ago. My niece, one of my nieces lives in New Jersey, and she has three children, Caroline, Max, and Cosmo. And Caroline was 2 years ago, and she was in a school play. And I went to see the school play, and I didn't know what it was about. My sister went with me, a grandchild. And I said, well, what's Caroline supposed to be doing? She said, it was a takeoff on Alice in Wonderland. She was supposed to be a car, you know, as opposed to the Alice in Wonderland. And Caroline came on the stage, and they wore cards as pockets. She had no card on. So I said to my sister, what's the story? My sister's a retired fourth grade teacher, and Caroline was in second grade. She had seven and her own children, and I didn't trust me, as far as that went. Well, she said, I don't know what happened to the card. The child's not upset, so it's okay. So that was fine. Went through the play. And so then they had a cast party at the school, but she finally came, we went someplace. And so she came to the table, she sat down, and her mother said to her, Caroline, what happened to your card? And she said, there was a girl that forgot her card and left it home. And she was crying, and she was so upset, I gave her my card. Mm-hmm. But isn't that who we are called? I mean, it was took what a mother took a therapist by the way, and she told that to a bunch of adults. And her reaction was, no big deal. That this is what you do. And I think that's who we are called to be in many situations, if we are loving. And let God love us into life, because I think that is how we become more loving. And so love is a way of being. Not necessarily heavy acts, but it's also a way of being. The energy which radiates when the blocks of it have been surrendered. We're all called to be these loving people. But there's lots of stuff, including our seven deadly attitudes that gave you away. And that's why I say surrender is so important, is to let go. You know, the 12-step tradition has a wonderful phrase, let go, let God. There's struggles in the tradition, how do you do that? But it is about letting go and letting God work in our lives. So love is more than emotion or thought. It is a state of being. It's what we have become through the pathway of surrender. It's a way of being in the world when my perspective, my perspective in the world is not what I can get, not what I can accumulate. He who dies with the most toys wins. I don't know what they win, but that's what the bumper sticker says, you know? I was visiting with a friend of mine last Saturday, about my age, and she has ALS. And she's a nurse. And she's taking care of people with ALS. And so she's in a difficult state with it right now. And she said she was in the beauty parlor. She lives in a relatively neighborhood, community in New Jersey. And she was in the beauty parlor recently getting her hair colored. And all these women were talking about all these things. And she said, they don't understand how off their priorities are. And to be open to different things. So it's a way of being in the world that says, how can I be of help to you? How can I comfort you? How can I loan you money if your car is broken? I had a wonderful opportunity, wonderful experience with money a couple years ago. If you want to catch Teresa's best side, catch me in the morning. At the end of the day, we're coming home from work, and I've driven in traffic in New Jersey for about 45 minutes. I'm probably not, you're not going to get the best side of me. And especially if you're a family member. And so my top 3 inches of my head said, used to say, you have your hand out to me. At the end of my day, I've gotten up early, I've gotten dressed, I've gone to work, I've worked a hard day, and I'm coming home, and you want something. Now, I'm no longer like that. As much. Several years ago, I was giving a temporary career workshop in the upper west side of New York. It was a beautiful spring day. I love spring. Isn't it wonderful? A lot of people I work with in AT&T or Dallas, they're befuddled when we have 30 inches of snow. How can you look at that? Now, fortunately, I just want to come. And I say to them, but we have four seasons. And you have to see the spring and the fall in New Jersey. It's gorgeous. It's wonderful. And so this particular day, I was driving to New York because I'm a new person from New Jersey. I don't take public transportation. We drive. You know, and on the upper east side, I'm riding along, beautiful day, and I turn the corner where the work to the street where the workshop is going to be held, the school. And there is a squeegee man in front of me. If you don't know what a squeegee man is, it's somebody with a dirty bottle of water and a dirty rag who wants to wash your windows. And I did the only thing I could think of doing. I prayed that the light would turn green before he got there. It didn't. And so he came to me. My car, I just had to wash. Thank you, clean car. I said, well, what do I do? And so I did something which I had seen a friend of mine do many times, but I could not do it until it came from my heart, because it was forced. I reached into my pocket, I pulled out some change, and I put it in his hand, and I said, say a prayer for me. I waved off the squeegee too, before he got there, dirty boy. And he stood there in the street, and he raised his eyes, and he said, dear God, please bless this lady who just gave me money. And so the light was still red. And he said, what are you doing here? I said, I'm here to give a centering prayer workshop. And this is of God, because I grew up in Jersey City. I still have lots of street smarts, trust me. And so what are you doing here? So I told him, I'm here to give a workshop on prayer. Oh, really? He said, my friend up there was another street. If I escaped this one, there was no one up there. And he said to me, my friend is spiritual. And I was like, oh my God, who would have thought? A spiritual squeegee. And it's about that opening to God, wherever God is. And I was open to the workshop. But it is about, you know, and how can I help you find a job? How can I console you when you're suffering major loss in your family? And it's a way of being in the world. Lovingness is a way through which we light up the world. You are the light of the world. How? By loving it. And I encourage us little things. Caroline's gesture with the card was just over the top. But she is a loving little child. A friend of mine, he is a school bus driver in Newtown, Connecticut, the Sandy Hook District. She lost a child that day. And curiously enough, we're having a contemplative outreach weekend that would be in New York, and she came. She didn't say anything to anyone. She said, I have to be in silence. I have to be away. Because another friend I had who lived in Newtown, it was all the press. You know, it was all this follow up. Meanwhile, you know, people were suffering. And Diane says that now she has, and she said that one of the things that they did in Newtown after the tragedy is they took all these bells, called Ben's bells, in memory of a little boy who died young. And the family wanted to carry on his legacy. He was a kind little boy. And they strewed them all over the Newtown, and to remind people to be kind. And Diane says now she has a sign in her bus kindness is all that matters. It is. And it is. It's so, such a practical way to be loving, isn't it? To hold the door. I live in Bayonne, it's a little town, and I walk down the street, I say hello to people. I don't know. I'm just greeting with the time of day. And encounter, once again, that thing that Francis has told us so much about. And that once we become loving, there are certain things we can never do. We can't be mean if we really move into that love. And the more we love, the more we can love. It's God's plan. You know, we would think, I'm giving love away, but there'll be less. No, there's more. And love is limitless. I am so little and God is so big. And love begets love. And just on a really practical level, I'm very, very interested in how spiritual things are manifested in our lives. Love makes us feel good. Doing good deeds releases endorphins in our brains. And so we're getting toward the end of our time together. And for my last comment, so we're going back to Paul. I'm not going to do a lexia with it, but I'm going to just read you something once again from Ephesians 3:16-21. A wonderful invitation Paul has to us to be more than we are today, to grow into the loving people God is calling us to be. And he says this, I ask God from the wealth of his glory to give you power through his spirit to be strong in your inner selves. And I pray that Christ will make his home in your hearts through faith. I pray that you may have your roots and foundation in love, so that you, together with God's people, may have the power to understand how broad and long, how high and deep is Christ's love. Yes, may you come to know his love, although it can never be fully known, and so be completely filled by the very nature of God. To him who by means of his power working in us is able to do so much more than we can do, than we can ever ask for or even think of. To God be the glory in the church and in Christ Jesus for all time, forever and ever.